All right, so we always hear about those huge corporations, right? The ones you see plastered everywhere.
Yeah.
But today, we're going deep into the world of what they call closely held corporation. Think more like family businesses,
Yeah.
small partnerships where things can get very, very personal.
Absolutely. And what makes these closely held corporations so fascinating is that the legal boundaries can get kind of blurry,
Yeah.
with these intertwined relationships and everyone having such a personal stake in the company. It creates a very unique legal landscape.
And that brings us to the case we're looking at today, Barth versus Barth,
Right.
a landmark case from the Indiana Supreme Court that really shook things up for those minority shareholders in these closely held corporations.
Yeah.
And this is one that I think every lawyer, especially those dealing with corporate law, should know like the back of their hand. The
Absolutely.
main question in Barth versus Barth was basically, does a minority shareholder have to jump through all these hoops of a derivative lawsuit when they feel they've been wronged? Or can they just sue directly for damages?
Exactly.
Okay, hold on. Before we get too far into the weeds here,
Sure.
can we break down some of these terms like derivative lawsuit,
Sure.
direct lawsuit? I mean, some of our listeners might be law students just starting out,
Yeah.
and they might not be familiar with all this jargon.
Absolutely no problem.
Okay.
So imagine a company's kind of like a ship, right?
Okay.
And any harm done to the company affects the whole vessel.
Uh-huh.
A derivative lawsuit is kind of like filing a complaint on behalf of the ship itself.
Gotcha.
So any money that's recovered goes right back into fixing the ship, not to the individual shareholder who brought the issue up.
I see.
That's usually how you deal with things like breaches of fiduciary duty by directors, that sort of thing.
So it's like you're suing to protect the overall value of the company, not just your individual piece of it.
Exactly.
Okay.
Now, a direct lawsuit that's different.
Yeah.
Here, the shareholder's saying, hey, I personally was harmed by this action. I want compensation. Like,
Right.
say somebody on that ship stole your luggage and you're suing them directly for your loss.
Gotcha.
That makes sense.
That's a great analogy that clears it up a lot. So back to Barth then.
Okay.
What was the situation there? Who are the players? What actually
No, so
happened?
we're talking about Barth Electric Company, a classic example of a closely held corporation.
Right.
Michael Barth, he was the majority shareholder. He had about 51% control.
Okay.
His brother Robert held a minority stake, almost 30%. As you can imagine, things got a little messy.
Classic family business drama, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, what were the accusations being thrown around?
Well, Robert claimed Michael was essentially using the company as his own personal piggy bank.
Oh, boy. Oh.
Excessive salaries for himself and his family member,
Oh, wow.
using company funds for personal expenses, messing with the dividend payouts to try and squeeze Robert out.
Really?
You name it.
Wow.
There were even accusations of shady investments made with company money.
That's a lot to unpack.
Yeah, it is.
So, how did all this corporate drama play out in the courts?
Well, it was quite the journey.
I bet.
The trial court initially sided with Michael, saying Robert had to file his claims as a derivative lawsuit.
Okay, the harm the ship scenario. I'm
Exactly.
guessing that's not where it ended.
Nope, not at all.
Okay.
The Court of Appeals overturned that decision, sided with Robert and his direct lawsuit approach.
Wow.
They recognized that in this specific situation, forcing a derivative lawsuit might not be fair.
Right.
And that's when the Indiana Supreme Court had to step in to settle things once and for all.
So this is where it really gets interesting.
It does.
What was the Supreme Court's thinking on this? Did they basically say, okay, direct lawsuits are the way to go now for all these closely held corporations?
Not quite.
Okay.
They didn't throw out the whole concept of derivative lawsuits entirely. What they did was recognize that those old rules and, designed for those massive
Yeah.
corporations, they didn't always fit the unique dynamics of these close-knit companies.
So they saw the close relationship between the shareholders, almost like partners,
Yeah.
as an important factor.
Exactly.
Okay.
The court basically said forcing a minority shareholder in that situation to sue on behalf of a company controlled by the very person they think is harming them.
Right.
Well, that just doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
No, it doesn't.
It could lead to some really unfair outcomes.
Yeah, I can see their point.
Right.
So did they just make it a free-for-all then?
Well,
Can any minority shareholder now just file a direct lawsuit whenever they feel like it?
not so fast.
Yeah.
They didn't want to just open up the floodgates of litigation either.
Right, of course.
The court actually adopted a rule from the American Law Institute that gives judges a framework for when to allow a direct lawsuit in these unique, closely held corporation situations.
Okay, so a framework to keep things in check.
Exactly.
I'm all ears. What does this framework look like?
Think of it like a three-pronged test.
Okay.
Like a legal checklist. First, the court has to ask, would allowing a direct lawsuit here just lead to a whole bunch of similar lawsuits against the company?
Gotcha.
They're trying to avoid a legal avalanche.
So they want to protect the company from being constantly bombarded with litigation.
Exactly.
Okay, makes sense. What's the second prong then?
The second prong, that's all about financial stability.
Okay.
The court has to consider if a direct lawsuit would seriously hurt the company's ability to pay its debts.
Makes sense. You got to think about the creditors too, right? They need to be protected.
Exactly. You have to balance everyone's interests.
Right. Shareholders, the company itself, the creditors.
Yeah.
What about that final prong then? What's the last question on this legal checklist?
The third prong focuses on the potential payout.
Okay.
The court has to ask, if we award damages in a direct lawsuit, can that money be divided fairly amongst everyone involved?
Uh-huh.
You have to think about the other shareholders, their stake in the company, too.
Right. It's like a fairness check to make sure no one's getting unfairly enriched or left out in the cold.
Exactly. And it's important to remember they didn't get rid of derivative lawsuits altogether.
Okay.
It's more like they added a new tool to the legal toolbox,
uh-huh.
recognizing that one size doesn't fit all in these corporate disputes.
I like that, a new tool in the toolbox.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's not like they just threw the doors wide open and said anyone can sue directly now.
Right. Exactly.
There's still some safeguards in place.
Yeah.
To make sure people aren't just taking advantage of the system.
Absolutely. It's all about finding that balance.
Right.
Barth versus Barth recognizes that, yeah, minority shareholders sometimes face unique challenges in these closely held corporations.
Yeah.
But it also tries to avoid creating chaos in the legal system.
Yeah, this is fascinating stuff.
Yeah.
I'm starting to really see why this is considered such a landmark case.
Yeah.
I mean, it could change the way we think about shareholder rights and corporate governance completely.
Right.
Especially in these smaller companies.
Yeah, it really could. And this isn't just some abstract legal theory either. It has real-world implications for lawyers dealing with these kinds of disputes.
Okay, so let's talk strategy then.
Sure.
How does Barth versus Barth change the game for attorneys who represent shareholders, especially those in the minority?
Well, for minority shareholders, it's like they've been given a new weapon in their legal arsenal.
Yeah.
They're not automatically forced to go down that derivative lawsuit path anymore.
Right.
Which can be time-consuming, expensive, and, let's be honest, not always the most effective way to get justice.
So now they've got this more direct way to seek some kind of remedy when they feel like they've been wronged.
Right.
It's kind of like a shortcut to the courthouse, but with some important conditions, right?
Exactly. Remember that three-prong test we were talking about?
Yes.
That's key. It acts like a filter, you know, making sure only the legitimate claims that actually meet those criteria can proceed as a direct lawsuit.
So you can't just sue over every little disagreement.
Right. Exactly.
The courts are still looking at, you know, the big picture, the impact on the company, the creditors.
Yeah.
And whether the whole thing is actually fair.
Precisely. Barth versus Barth gives minority shareholders more power.
Yeah.
But like they say, with great power comes great responsibility.
Of course.
Shareholders and their lawyers have to really think things through before jumping into a direct lawsuit.
Yeah. I can see how this case would make things a lot more interesting for corporate lawyers.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, they have to really think strategically, weigh the pros and cons of each approach.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not just about legal strategy either.
Okay.
This case really sparks a bigger conversation about ethics.
Right.
And the dynamics of these closely held businesses.
Right. You're right. It makes us ask questions about things like loyalty, fairness, accountability.
Exactly.
Especially in these companies where personal relationships and professional relationships are so intertwined.
Exactly. Like what happens when a majority shareholder puts their own interests ahead of the company's?
Yeah.
Or tries to push out a minority shareholder unfairly?
Right.
Barth versus Barth is a clear message that those actions have consequences.
It's like the court is saying, hey, we're watching, and we're not afraid to step in and protect the little guy.
Exactly. And that's a powerful message, not just for the Barths,
right,
but for anyone involved in these closely held corporations.
Right.
It really highlights the importance of acting in good faith, communicating openly, and treating all shareholders fairly.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Whether they own a little or a lot of the company.
Now, I'm curious, do you think this case could have implications even beyond closely held corporations?
That's an interesting question.
Could it influence how we think about shareholder rights in those big publicly traded companies?
Yeah.
I mean, the facts of Barth versus Barth are specifically about a closely held corporation.
Right.
But those principles of fairness and the need to protect minority shareholders' rights, That could apply anywhere, right?
I think so. Yeah, I mean, it's certainly possible.
So it's like a ripple effect, potentially changing the whole corporate landscape.
Yeah, it could inspire legal challenges in other areas where the traditional way of doing things might not be protecting those with less power.
It's amazing to me how one case from the Indiana Supreme Court
Right.
can have such far-reaching consequences.
Yeah.
It really shows you how the law is constantly evolving and adapting.
Absolutely. It's always trying to find that balance
Right.
between all the different competing interests.
Okay, so we've covered a lot here today, from the basics of the case
Yeah.
to its potential impact on corporate law and governance.
Uh-huh.
What are some key takeaways for our worst listeners to really walk away with?
I'd say the biggest one is this Barth versus Barth has changed the game for minority shareholders in those closely held corporations.
Yeah.
It gives them more options, more power, but it also comes with the responsibility to use that power wisely.
And for lawyers,
Yeah.
it's a reminder that we need to stay on top of these developments.
Oh, absolutely.
We need to be creative and strategic in how we approach these kinds of disputes.
Absolutely. Barth versus Barth really highlights how important it is to understand all the nuances of corporate law and to find solutions that are both legally sound and ethically responsible.
Yeah, it also underscores the fact that even in the corporate world, which can seem pretty impersonal at times,
Right.
human relationships and ethical considerations still matter a lot.
I couldn't agree more. At the end of the day, businesses are made up of people.
Right.
And the law needs to reflect that.
Yeah, I like that a lot. You know, it feels like Barth versus Barth is almost like a wake-up call.
It is.
Not just for the legal world, but for anyone involved in these closely held businesses.
Right. It really highlights how important it is for shareholders, especially in those close-knit companies, to be proactive, you know?
Right.
Think things through early on, have those tough conversations, and get everything in writing.
So you're saying Barth versus Barth might actually lead to more comprehensive shareholder agreements,
Oh, absolutely.
you know, spelling out everyone's rights and responsibilities from the very beginning.
Exactly. Don't wait until a dispute blows up to try and figure out who has what rights.
Yeah, that's asking for trouble.
Yeah, it's a recipe for disaster.
Like they say, prevention is always better than a cure, especially when it comes to legal battles.
I couldn't agree more. And you know, it's not just about the legal documents either.
Okay.
Barth versus Barth also emphasizes how important open communication is
Right.
and a healthy dose of trust within these businesses.
It's like you can't choose your family, but you can choose your business partners.
Right.
And even if it is family, you still need to treat each other fairly and professionally.
Exactly. And when disputes do arise, Barth versus Barth has given us a roadmap for navigating those tricky situations.
Yeah, it has.
It's given those minority shareholders a stronger voice
Right.
and empowered them to seek justice when they feel they've been treated unfairly.
It's almost like the court drew a line in the sand and said, we're not going to let majority shareholders abuse their power anymore
Yeah.
or treat those minority shareholders poorly.
It's a powerful message, and I think it will have a lasting impact on how we think about corporate governance,
Yeah.
not just in Indiana, but across the whole country.
This whole deep dive has really been eye-opening for me.
Yeah.
I mean, the intricacies of these shareholder relationships,
Right.
the legal complexities that can come up, especially in those companies where the personal and the professional are so closely connected.
It's a fascinating area of law, that's for sure.
It is.
And Barth versus Barth is a case that every lawyer, every law student,
Yeah.
and honestly, anyone involved in a closely held business should be familiar with.
It's a reminder that knowledge is power, right?
Absolutely.
Understanding your rights, your responsibilities,
Yeah.
the legal tools you have at your disposal.
It can make all the difference.
Yeah, it can help you navigate those rough waters of corporate disputes.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
Well, I think we've really unpacked Barth versus Barth today.
I think so.
You know, we've explored the facts, the legal reasoning, the implications, even some practical advice for folks out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And hopefully our listeners have come away with a deeper understanding of this landmark case and its potential impact on the future of corporate law.
It's been great.
So as we wrap up this deep dive,
Okay.
what's one key takeaway you would leave our listeners with?
I would say this, whether you're a majority shareholder, a minority shareholder, or a lawyer advising clients on these matters, Barth versus Barth is a powerful reminder that fairness, transparency, and clear communication,
Yeah.
those are essential for any closely held corporation to thrive.
And don't forget about that shareholder agreement.
Oh, right.
Get it all in writing.
Absolutely crucial.
Well, that's all the time we have for today's deep dive.
Okay.
Thanks for joining us, and be sure to tune in next time as we explore another fascinating legal frontier.